So we're back home. We just got home yesterday in California, and I'm sitting here in the living room, and this is, sorry, just to get things straight, this is the third Thursday, but it's actually the fourth Thursday, a World Peace Diet Circle call for March 2021. It's March 25th, 2021, and I'm Dr. Will Tuttle. Welcome, everyone. It's wonderful to have you all here. Wow, what a nice group we have. We have a special guest today who will be joining us in a few minutes, Joanna Carmichael. And I'm delighted that she'll be joining us for the beginning part of the call. So at the very beginning, we, as you know, we like to take a few minutes and do a short meditation to connect together with each other and with our own inner wisdom and compassion. So let's go ahead and begin that part of our call now. So feel free. I basically have everybody muted because I think that's a little easier for us as we're going ahead here. Feel free to have your cameras on or off, however you'd like. Sometimes for the meditation, it's nicer to have it off, but it's up to you. I'll go ahead and start. I'm sitting here at the piano. I'm sorry we started a little bit late. It's a lot to set up here. So anyway, here we go. I'm going to be just doing a short guided meditation. We can begin. Opportunity that we have to be together here this afternoon, this evening, wherever you are. We give thanks for each other, for this community. We give thanks for the vegan movement, which is an ancient movement based on ahimsa, nonviolence, kindness, compassion, respect, justice, and love. So we send our love now especially to the animals of this earth, tremendous suffering with human hands. We send our love and appreciation for the beauty that they bring to our world. All of the birds flying in the skies, all the water beings, ever-increasing number of people awake. awakening to the inherent wisdom that brings harmony, peace and joy, that brings freedom and liberation. The delusion of separateness to the truth, and the infinite interconnectedness of all life. Face. We see the whole earth now glowing. glowing with peace, a beautiful jewel in space. Give thanks for this precious opportunity of this human life to grow in compassion and wisdom and creativity, to contribute our unique song, our unique note, the grand music of this world, and to be part of the solution to the problems and challenges. We give thanks for our intuition, the inner guidance system that allows us, leads us to live our own life authentically. May all beings be happy. May all beings be at peace. May all beings be free. May we together continue to work together to build a world that cares for all living beings. Reflects the truth, shining always in our hearts and in the hearts of all living beings. A world that reflects our true nature. Thank you all again for your precious presence here and our shared call. A lot of you are calling in by phone, and some of you, a lot of people will be listening later, of course, to the recording who can't join us. We have our persistent and motivated a friend from England calling in. I know at 2 in the morning, Davi, thanks for joining us. That's great. So I'll go ahead and dive right in here to the beginning of our call together. As you know, we typically go between an hour and an hour and a half. And we're really fortunate, I think, to be able to have with us on the call Joanna Carmichael. I just really recently learned of Joanna and her work. She has a wonderful online summit coming up soon, which is titled From Pharma to Dharma. I love that title. And so her own path has been many years in the medical system. She's a registered nurse, and so she knows the system from the inside. And what price we pay, really, for pharmaceutical interventions and medications and all of that. And she has also worked very hard to embrace and learn about alternative healing modalities, especially Eastern ones like Ayurveda, and is now helping people through Ayurvedic counseling and so forth, and vegan living and compassion and spiritual, more spiritual approach and focus in the work that needs to be done here on this planet, which I think is essential. Authentic spirituality, I think, is the most powerful liberating force there is. And so she's with us to talk a little bit about her journey and also, I think, hopefully a little bit about the upcoming summit so we can learn more. But from pharma to dharma. So dharma, as you know, is an old Sanskrit word that has to do, it means the spiritual teachings and also our own way of living an authentic life. And I think in many ways, pharma has been sort of hijacking us away from that for various reasons in various ways. So remember, everyone, you can press *6 if you are on a phone, if you'd like to ask a question or raise your hand. And you can also unmute yourself, I think, if you're on the computer somehow or other. Everybody's muted now, but we'll go ahead and I'd love to answer your questions, or I'm sure she will too. So I'll go ahead. Let's go ahead and can you unmute yourself there, Joanna? And,
sure. Oh,
there we go. Okay.
I will. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good to
that
have
meditation
you with us.
Was, oh my God. So beautiful. So beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hi everyone. Hi everyone.
Everyone says hi. Waving.
Great.
Okay, I'll just go ahead and start out maybe. Can you tell us a little bit about your, just briefly, your journey and how it's been going, especially I think the last year or so, to be able to help people understand that there's another way of living besides just depending on the mainstream narrative of food, which is so toxic, and medications, which I think is also very toxic. What can you tell us about what you've learned and contribute to our understanding? It'd be great to hear some.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me to your meeting tonight. I'm really, really thrilled to be here. My journey has been kind of diverse and unique. I'm a registered nurse and have been one for over 33 years. I did psych nursing for about 2 years, and then I got synchronistically derailed into the pharmaceutical research arena, and which was started out to be a very, very rewarding career for me. It actually renewed nursing for me, because I was never made to be a floor nurse or do that type of hospital nursing. In nursing school, I discovered that, much to the chagrin of my parents and et cetera. So I ended up in this corporate environment, but doing research really actually renewed nursing for me, because I actually got to spend time with patients. So I started out working for two pharmaceutical companies on the pharma side, monitoring, being a medical monitor, monitoring for the integrity, ensuring the integrity of research data. And so, it was very high pressure, a lot of deadlines, timelines, because as they're doing drug studies, which come in four phases, after animal testing, unfortunately, it goes into human testing in normal healthy male volunteers, then it goes into phase two, which is testing in a disease state, and then phase three, where you start adding concomitant medications and concomitant conditions, and then phase four, which is post-marketing. So I experienced the whole gamut. When I was 26, I started my own company because I saw the need for people doing good research, because what I was running into as a medical monitor was that, a research study would be dumped on an office nurse who was already busy, and they really weren't capturing data correctly or doing regulatory things the right way. So I started a company based on that. So then I went from doing that to actually enrolling patients in drug studies, which ended up being very rewarding because I got to see the mind-body connection up close and personal because of the placebo effect, which is about 40%. And so I did every therapeutic area, lots and lots of cardiology, but GI, GU, neurology, I did it all in my research company. Simultaneously with that, I started studying metaphysics and divinity. And of course, with that, alternative medicine and Ayurveda ended up being my love. And, as that journey started to where the world started to come together, because people would say, well, how can you be a metaphysician and do drug research for a living? And the honest answer was, I don't know. I was passionate about both of them, because those of us who did research were really and are really well-intended. We wanted cures. We wanted to find options for patients that would actually help them. But as I got to learn more about the actual industry and see and be in meetings where I actually saw data manipulated and saw how we manipulate study results and saw what happened mid-study where it was going in the wrong direction, but we had to make it go in the right direction. So I got to see that firsthand, simultaneously with seeing the mind-body connection up close and personal. So it was really quite a paradox. I'm actually writing a book about it, Pharma to Dharma, A Nurse's Journey from the Dark Side of Medicine to the Light. And so that's how the whole Pharma to Dharma thing came about, quite accidentally. But I just because of the corruption I was learning about, I decided to leave the industry permanently in 2009. I started a holistic center and then jumped into it full time. And now I'm an outspoken critic against the pharmaceutical industry and the interconnected corruption and deception with the factory farms and the food industry and how it conspires to keep us overweight and sick and dying. And so here we are. Here we are at Pharma to Dharma. So.
That's fantastic. Thank you. I'm just muted there. I really find that nutshell that you just gave to be enormously fascinating, and I'm sure everyone else on the call does as well, because
you
have direct experience with the way the pharmaceutical industry tries to manipulate data in order to foist medications on the public that really are not safe. Can you say a little bit more about that? I mean, I think that's just critical. And right now, especially during this whole rollout of vaccines and people sort of lining up to place enormous trust in the pharmaceutical industry. Do you have any insight about that?
I sure do. I think it's a grand deception. And, for us to put our trust just exclusively in medical professionals and doctors, denying our own knowing and intuition, and going against nature instead of with nature, I think is a grave mistake. This is like putting a band-aid on a hemorrhage. Every time we see something that doesn't agree with our definition of how we think things should be, we right away want to attack, whether it's with a pesticide or a drug or, whatever. It's more on the attack and without any consciousness around what the long-term effects are. I still do nursing in home care, to keep my hands in it. And I can tell you that my seniors are sadly on 10 and 15 and 20 medications and it grows, and nobody talks to them about diet. Nobody's talking to them about lifestyle except me, of course. And luckily I'm in a position to do so, but because of the job I have, I work for a nonprofit who does not take, it's private pay. So I do have more freedom in that regard, but I have worked in skilled nursing where I don't have that freedom. And it's like, if the definition is if Medicare isn't going to pay for it, you can't say it. So I can't suggest turmeric or lemon water or ginger or a diet change or anything, because Medicare isn't going to cover it. It's not part of an ICD-10 code. And so it's just, I have firsthand experience on the medical professional side of how, really, messed up our system truly is. And it's time that, we spoke out and took our power back and really took responsibility for our own health and well-being, because that's the only way that we're going to change things, because it's by really demanding it. Or commanding it, because it's certainly not being done. And it's not that medical professionals are evil or anything like that. There's light workers in big pharma. There's light workers at the FDA and the CDC. But, you know, you're fighting a system that is inextricably interconnected. And it's a very difficult thing to try to fight, especially now there's censorship and, you know, those of us who don't buy into the narrative with the vaccines and think differently about it, you know, we're being censored. I expect to get censored just because of the title of my summit. But, you know, we can't keep quiet. We really can't keep quiet because I see people every day that are just, you know, riddled with side effects. And these medications are toxic. I did the studies on them. And, you know, we collect data. And I was there to ensure the integrity of research data. But when you're working as hard as I worked for, you know, over 20 years, and then to know that your hard work was undone by a payoff, it's really upsetting. And that's ultimately why I left the industry.
Wow, thanks. And you mentioned it along the way that you discovered that there's a lot of power in placebos when you were doing the studies for Big Pharma.
Yeah.
Can you say a little bit more about that? Because I think that's something that's not really appreciated in our society.
Yeah. Well, the placebo effect is about 40%, which is pretty high. And so the FDA requires 2 well-controlled placebo-controlled trials in order for a drug to go for an NDA, which is a new drug application and ultimately approval. And so just so you know, the drug company can actually send whatever studies they choose. They may do 10 studies, and 8 of them may show terrible results. But they can send the 2 that send the best results. And so I'll give you an example, like in cardiology, where you have very, very objective evidence, you know, of a patient. Like I did a lot of angina studies, for example. You put a patient on stable angina, basically, after a heart attack and a cardiac cath and a bypass surgery. And so you're trying to manage that angina. And so the new drug was trying to treat that angina. So the first thing that happens is they get put into a placebo run-in phase, which is just to establish that the patient has the condition that they're actually, you know, that the drug treatment is targeting, which is important. That is an important thing to do because you don't want to give a study drug to somebody that doesn't have coronary artery disease or hypertension or whatever the target of the treatment is. So you put them in a placebo run-in. And it's single blind, so the patient doesn't know they're on placebo, but the doctor and the study coordinator do. And so what would happen is they sign informed consent, they're taken off of their medications, and they're given the study drug, which is placebo. And so you're waiting to see changes when they exercise on a treadmill. So you're looking to see blood pressure changes, heart rate changes, ST segment depression, which is a measurement on an EKG, that shows that they have disease in their coronary arteries. And what was fascinating is that they would be into the run-in phase and start to say, gosh, honey, these pills are terrific. I'm feeling really great. Well, they were off of their cardiac medications and on a placebo. And the objective evidence that was going to ultimately put them into the study didn't exist. So, like, you know, the ST segment depression on the EKG, the stopping due to angina or shortness of breath was like the endpoint for them stopping and then entering into the double blind phase. And we would lose a lot of people in the screening phase because they actually felt better off of their medication. and then those that did get randomized to treatment, you know, we did studies where our patients were doing great. And then they would do an interim analysis and say, you know, we're canning this drug. It's not efficacious. It's not this. It's not that. And we'd say, well, our patients are doing great. And so that was fascinating on another level because in a drug study, they get a lot of attention. And so my feeling was that it was the extra attention and the care and the listening to them and hearing about, like, I knew their families and their grandchildren and their spouses and their job situation. And it was really literally matters of the heart that always had to do with heart disease, even if they were doing all the right things physically and, you know, in their lifestyle. So, you know, that was seeing the placebo effect up close and personal. So whatever they ended up being on, some of them did end up being on placebo, and they did great. And the standard of care in medicine is that after you've had a heart attack, you know, they treat you, they do bypass or angioplasty or whatever needs to be done, or manage you medically. And then when you go back for your visits, as long as you're stable, the conversation is never about, okay, well, how can we get you off of some of these drugs? It's never about that. It's you're stable, goodbye, we'll renew your scripts and come back in 6 months. It's never about how can we get you off of these drugs. But in a drug study, you actually get to see what happens when they are taken off of some of these things post an event like a heart attack or a stroke, and see how well they can do. And so, the you know, it's a very different conversation that just doesn't happen in Western medicine. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, that's so interesting. It makes me really glad I have not been to a doctor in 50 years. You know?
I don't go to doctors either.
You probably learned your lesson. Yeah, and so the when you say 40% effective, I mean, it sounds like a lot of the people, as soon as you got them off the medications, they actually showed the first real improvement. Mm-hmm. But 40%,
just the act of taking that pill, thinking that it's going to lower my blood pressure, it's going to help my heart disease,
right,
is like, seems to be, you know, and you don't know that until they go into a placebo run-in. You know, in a hypertension study, they have 4 weeks on a placebo to make sure that their blood pressure, that they actually have hypertension, because you wouldn't want to randomize them to a study drug if they don't actually have hypertension. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they screen fail out because they don't have hypertension. It was just a fluky thing, or white coat syndrome or whatever. And then if they continue to do well, it kind of emphasizes the point that they didn't need to be on that medication to begin with.
Right.
You know, and they were just put on a drug because that's the easiest thing to do, put them on a drug.
That's what they do, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll just repeat. If anyone has a question, press *6 or just raise your hand. I would like to ask another question more specifically about the upcoming summit. If you can just give us the basic facts about when it will be and who will be, perhaps, and some of what you're hoping to accomplish with the summit, because I think it's really good for us to attend that and maybe tell our friends and colleagues and so forth.
Thank you. I appreciate that opportunity. The summit will be airing April 5th through the 9th, so 5 days. I currently have six speakers. I'm working on a seventh tomorrow, and I hope to have 10 by the time the summit ends. I just think that it's time not to be quiet anymore. You know, people who have been whistleblowers or who have been wanting to tell the truth and have been fearful, and I've been one of them, especially because of the job that I do have, and it's time we kind of let that go and just told the truth about what's actually going on with the interconnected deception and corruption in these industries and how they continually feed into one another. And so pharma to dharma, unlocking the truth about the pharmaceutical industry, food, and factory farms is to point out these deceptions and these corruptions so that we as individuals can take responsibility and decide and vote with our conscience and our dollars as to how we're going to live our lives. And I'm kind of done with the fear of, like, what people are going to think and, you know, I could lose my job. I don't actually care at this point because I think the truth really needs to be said. My speakers include Dr. Will Tuttle, Dr. Brian Clement from the Hippocrates Institute. I have a man who is Dave Schmidt, who is a former United States senator and a financial guy who, and we're talking about consciousness and how the consciousness is moving and how thoughts create our reality. And so he's, you know, totally, we're having a metaphysical discussion. I have a naturopath who's interviewing tomorrow who has worked for the big pharma and for the CDC and can tell you who she was actually paid by, and it wasn't the government. It was another, you know, another lobbyist, organization. I have another pharmaceutical insider who actually saw the abuse of animals and some of the things that go on in the pharmaceutical industry. And I also have Ingrid Newkirk, who is the president of PETA. And so I'm very excited to have the summit, because it's, for me, it's the beginning of a movement into the consciousness where we're actually headed, and for the light to win over the darkness that has been on the planet for centuries and beyond. So. Right. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. You know, I when I saw, I think I sent you an email saying that, when I saw that you were doing something,
you did.
Pharma to Dharma, I wrote back that I said, you know, I am born for this. I just
you did.
I can't think of anything more important in many ways, because in my 40 years of vegan activism, one of the things that has become very obvious to me is that the pharmaceutical industry is probably the number one enemy we have in terms of an industry, much, much more than even the meat, dairy, and egg industries. I mean, pharmaceutical industry really is so corrupt and powerful.
Yeah.
And they give, you know, billions of dollars of medications to these poor animals and then to the humans.
Yeah.
And on every level, it's just profiting on misery and violence and causing misery and violence they have such a tight grip on the bankers, on the media, on the government agencies. I mean, really, and people somehow think they're friendly. Even a lot of vegans, like, well, you know, they don't see. I don't know why they don't see that. But anyway, it's really exciting. I think that you're writing a book about it as well, which I'm sure Jeff Bezos will not allow to be sold on Amazon. And now they've got the one place you have to buy everything. So yeah. I know it's really the censorship that's sort of the modern day book burning spree. And even Dr. Seuss, they're trying to get rid of him for, it's just really ridiculous. But I really salute you and your courage and your tremendous experience. I mean, really, actually, I didn't know that you had that kind of hands-on experience with doing these various kinds of tests where you could see what's actually happening to people by the different medications and when they're off the medications, and then how the industry tries to skew that. And basically, since they have their own people in the FDA, it's really not hard for them to put all kinds of things on the market and get them approved. And then, of course, with vaccines, they're not even, you don't even need approval. Really, it's just
obviously.
Obviously,
we don't. Yeah, which is why people are not more upset about that. I for the life of me, I don't understand. This is not approved except for emergency use. They're denying what treatments do exist. They're calling things COVID deaths when they're not. With people with pre-existing conditions, and I'm just appalled at the pressure and the fear-mongering that has gone on to get people vaccinated without knowing any long-term effects. And we know that, you know, a lot of drugs make it to the market and then get taken off the shelves because of what they discover post-marketing, because they continue to do studies. A great example, you know, cholesterol medications. When I was doing studies on the statins, we weren't even testing for cholesterol. We were testing for the liver damage that the drug was going to cause. And so now they do is add that to the package labeling, that this can cause liver damage. But the standard of care is that if you're a cardiac patient, by God, you're going to be on a statin. And it's obscene. I mean, it's obscene.
Wow, I know it's almost incomprehensible that we have a situation like this where I just read today that the U.S. government, our government, with our taxpayer money, is spending over $1 billion marketing these so-called vaccines for COVID just to get people to take them. I mean, that's something that the pharmaceutical industry usually does is market their products. But if we've got the government, us, ourselves, marketing it to ourselves, and something that already so many people have died from that. So I guess I'm not sure how quickly we humans seem to be learning about the what I call the Trojan horse, that something that appears to be benevolent, like meat, dairy, and eggs, but no, it's not in our best interest. And the same thing, of course, with these pharmaceutical interventions.
No, and wait 5, 10, 15 years when, it's people are going to try to get pregnant. And, and it'll affect future generations in terms of what this so-called vaccine is going to do to us, not to mention the marketing of the booster shots, that are going to continue just like the flu shot is marketed when it doesn't do all that much. And the vaccine industry is immune to lawsuits. They're immune to the lawsuits. So they make it so that there is no recourse. And people are buying it, which just blows my mind. So
does. It's incredible. Yeah, thank you. Gosh, this has been so fascinating. But I think we have a few questions. So let's see. Kenny, you got your hand up. Kenny, do you want to say something?
Thank you. Thank you for being here, Joanna. I have a few questions that I just want to preface it by saying, I was like everybody else I knew. I ate meat and dairy. I knew vegetarians. And when it was 25 years ago, I saw the video Diet for New America. Mm-hmm. And I had a video business. I watched it about 10 times. I was so shocked. But the thing that motivated me, I've been to 50 vegetarian conferences since then. And I've read the book. But the point is, the thing I want to ask you about is, have you seen the Diet for New America PBS 1-hour documentary?
Haven't seen that one. I've seen a lot of them, but I haven't seen that one.
It came out in 1992, I think, a few years after the Diet for New America. You're familiar with that book, right, John Robbins?
Mm-hmm.
It opened up the door to something that I'm still in shock about, because what I ate, like everybody, I ate hamburgers and hot dogs and steak and corned beef and I didn't even think I was eating an animal. And then I got to see the animals and then I could see they were just like my dogs and cats. And I was just, and then I learned that Will Tuttle's book is the most important book I've ever read, but paints a picture of the food industry is just the most horrible, corrupt, and the media is lying. I can't believe it's like, and they watch TV and they see commercials for drugs and they have all the 20 side effects. So my question to you, so you haven't seen that, what percentage of people would you say, Joanna, get heart attacks from the food, which is in that video? You should see that video. Dr. Clapper points a guy just had a heart attack. And I just think that the food clogs up the arteries. But I think there's also people getting heart attacks from emotional things, What percentage would you say is from food, which clogs up the blood vessels and emotional horror, which I think, and I'm just curious on that part. But, and also, is there mercury in the vaccines? If you could tell me, I'd like to know. These are 19.
As far as mercury, I don't know, but I will tell you, I had to take someone for a vaccine the other day, and it was laughable. I'm actually trying to pull up a picture on my iPhone, and I'm going to try to show it to you. You bring up emotions. I am all about emotional spiritual work as a metaphysician, and what I saw when I was doing drug studies was that people could be doing all the right things, and you can have a heart attack with absolutely clean coronary arteries. But what I found, because I was I got to spend so much time with these patients as a study coordinator, because I wasn't doing hospital or office nursing. So I got to spend sometimes an hour or two at each visit, so I knew everything about them. And matters of the heart have to do with matters of the heart. So it had to do with love and forgiveness and joy and hating your job, hating your spouse, where there were really emotional issues that were interconnected. Now, the people that were eating very poorly, you know, they had in their minds, well, you know, I'm taking Lipitor. And I'm like, well, you're not supposed to take Lipitor with a cheeseburger chaser. You know, that's not really what the point of the exercise is, not to mention what it's doing for your liver. So I would, it's all of it. It's body, mind, it's heart, it's spirit. To give you a percentage, I can't really give you an accurate percentage.
You say food is a direct effect of a heart attack.
It's, you know, about 20, when I first started in metaphysics, I started my company when I was 26. I started studying metaphysics when I was about 27 because something happened in my life that started me on that journey. And so metaphysically, there got to be just a real disconnect that, you know, that it's not only, I saw Dean Ornish at a conference, like a body, mind, soul conference, and he was showing 25 years ago that you could reverse coronary artery disease with diet and meditation, stress reduction and exercise. And I was a scientist, you know, I'm still am a scientist. I appreciate data and proof and all of that. And he was showing on thallium scans that coronary artery disease could be reversed. And I was blown away because I didn't learn that in nursing school. No doctor learns that in medical school. And so that's what started me thinking and pursuing metaphysical studies and everything like that, that there's so much more to it than just, you know, oh, you just get a disease, it's random. It's not random. It's, you know, it's many things. It could be karmic. And even if it's karmic, you still need to learn the lesson of whatever, you know, the disease is trying to show you. I do meditations with people to have a conversation or a dialogue with that part of the body that's giving them the trouble. And I'm always amazed at what they're able to discern. It's like, well, there's no joy in my life. I realize that I'm moving too fast. I'm always busy. I don't like myself. I don't like my job. You know, and most heart attacks occur 9 a.m. Monday morning because of the Sunday night phenomenon of, I have to go to work tomorrow. Instead of like waking up Monday morning and I get to go to work tomorrow, you know, because I'm excited about it. And so it's many factors. And, you know, like I said, they could be doing all the right things, but I think the first cause is always emotional because what people are coming to me for is never what I think, what I find is the first cause.
Right. Thank you. I have Tammy Hay has a question, I think. Tammy, go ahead. Press *6. Unmute. Yeah, there she is. Okay, good.
Hi, Tammy.
Hi, thank you so, so much for your work and your dedication and your bravery, you know. You don't see it that way once you cross the path and you know that you don't have a choice, but it's brave. It's brave. You're coming up against a really big giant. And I just want to really extend my gratitude for that, you know. I was dying of Crohn's, and I was really got the sickest when I went on an autoimmune suppressant drug, Remicade, like I was kind of at the last whip. And
it worked.
totally whacked up my immune system, and that's when I ended up in the hospital for 4 months on Remicade, you know. And I finally gave in. And the heart examples, you know, I really appreciate that. You know, my son, I believe he died of a broken heart at 31. You know, he had a baby that his mom wouldn't let him see her unless he stayed with her. And so I get that whole broken heart syndrome thing. And, you know, I guess I don't really have any questions. I'm really moved by your work. And I just want to tell you how much you're appreciated.
Thank you. Oh, thank you so much. I so appreciate that. And I hope you're healthy. I hope you're doing better. And I totally believe you can die of a broken heart. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I wrote a book called Earth Gut, The Story of Peace, Love, and Microbes on my journey through Crohn's and colitis. But just to really about trying to help people understand the connection of peace, love, and microbes in their gut. So working through the microbiome I'm doing great. Thank you. Except partly to my great teacher, Dr. Will Tuttle, too. Thank you for your work.
Mm-hmm. My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Tammy.
I just wanted to show where did it go? I don't know if you'll be able to see this, but I had to take a patient for a COVID vaccine, and the nurse shoves a paper in front of them and asks, are you allergic to any of these things? I don't know if you guys can see this.
Oh, wow.
Can you read it?
Yeah. It's...
Can you read the ridiculous amount of chemicals and ingredients?
mRNA is right. Is the first one. How do you know if you're allergic to mRNA?
I know.
All right. Know. Oh, that's so funny.
Polyethylene glycol. I mean, you can't even pronounce any of these things.
That's toxic. Polyethylene.
I know. I know. And it's like, how would a patient who's 92 or any age for that matter? And so this is what it was. It was like a cattle chute, honest to God. And I honestly, I was nauseous. I saw the vaccine go into her and I felt nauseous. I'm like, I can't even believe I'm witnessing this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really devastating, what's happening. And, I know that the Pfizer vaccine has a list of ingredients, which I guess is what you showed, and there are quite a few toxins in that particular one. And as Anne, I think, wrote here, that it's not actually a vaccine because it's not a vaccine. It's not about your immune system. It's about creating this protein,
which can
very well lead to pathogenic priming and a huge death or crippling disease a few months down the road. And but the other one, the Moderna, they don't even give a list of ingredients. It's just it's just their proprietary secret they're putting in.
Right.
I mean, who would ever do that?
No prescribing information is given with that. They sign consent, but it's on an electronic pad, so they don't get a copy. We did drug studies, they signed consent, they got a copy. That's what we as monitors checked, that the patient did get, in fact, give informed consent to be in a drug study. This is this is insane.
Yeah, the way it goes against the Geneva Conventions and everything, the Nuremberg trial, I mean, all the whole idea that informed consent. And it's really, this is the point, I guess, is that we are becoming the livestock. We're, the cows, sheep, and pigs don't get informed consent either. They're just exploited. And I think if we're going to continue to exploit animals, that's karma, right? I mean, it's coming back.
That's
and people seem to actually want it. That's the irony of the whole thing. They seem to yearn to be dominated and exploited and injected with things they don't even know what it is and really be killed. I mean, there's something very perverse going on here, very anti-spiritual, that I think shows the fact that we really need to make a change in the way we're living in a very powerful way and very soon. Okay, we have Andy. Andy has her hand up. Go ahead, Andy, if you'd like to unmute.
Hi. First, thank you so much. This is wonderful to know there's another person out there doing wonderful things. I'm just curious, have you, when you brought this person in for this shot, did you try to talk to the person about it, or are you allowed to? Could you get fired from, trying to tell them that this is dangerous or the truth about it, or do you just have to totally keep quiet? How does that work?
Let me put it this way. If I were in a nursing situation where I had to abide by Medicare laws and regulations, I definitely would be fired because I was, when I did that work in skilled nursing, I was told under no uncertain terms, don't do that weird stuff you do with food and herbs and stuff like that. So, because they saw that on my CV that I'm a holistic practitioner, Ayurveda, and they're like, don't do any of that stuff. Where I am now, it's private pay, so I have a little bit more freedom because I don't have to answer to Medicare. And when they ask me, I tell them. And then I tell them also, I said, and they'll say, are you getting vaccinated? And I said, absolutely not. And I tell them why. And I said, but it's a very personal decision. And then, having been with people that I did have to take to get vaccinated, I realized that I needed to be less judgmental, more accepting, and because they told me they felt relieved, and because they've been sold a bill of goods basically to say that this is the solution, when it's not the solution. It's not the, it's a Band-Aid on a hemorrhage, and it's a false sense of security, but they haven't hugged their grandkids in a year. And so that, I mean, that's incredibly sad to me that they didn't, and that they let that, because I think the bigger pandemic is the fear and the isolation, especially in the elderly population. And so I am a little, I have to be careful. And frankly, nobody's actually asked me. Everybody at my company has been vaccinated, and all the caregivers have been vaccinated. I'm probably one of the very, very few, if not the only one, that is not going to. I'm just not doing it, and I will get fired over it because I'm just not willing to do it. And you know, and once my summit gets out, maybe I will be fired. I don't know. So, but that's okay. That it's like, I'm ready to bring it, you know?
Thank you so much for your courage. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for your question.
That's a great question, Andy. Thank you. And I feel the same way. It's very admirable. And I think the only thing, I guess, when you think about it, your idea of the placebo, I mean, if these people have never been able to really hug their grandkids, like you're saying, and then they think, well, if I get the vaccine, then I'll be able to. Then I'll be sort of on the other side of this. And I guess that's a positive placebo effect that could help the person be healthier. But the irony is, as far as I understand, the messaging we're getting from the CDC is, if you get vaccinated, you still got to wear your mask. You still got to social distance. It doesn't change a dang thing. And that's what really gets me. It's like, why in the heck are people doing this when you don't get any real benefit? I mean, they don't even say it will stop you from getting the so-called disease. All they say is, well, it may reduce its severity. And already it has like a 99.6% survival rate. So it's already extremely not hurting very many people. So it's just one of those things. It's almost like, you know, go ahead.
There have been deaths. There's the VAERS vaccine adverse reporting, and there have been deaths. And one of our caregivers.
From the vaccine, right? From the vaccine.
Like who died as a result. Well, seemingly, you know, you can kind of relate it when it happens right afterwards or whatever. We had a caregiver get very, very ill after the vaccine. She ended up in the ER. So, you know, but those things are not reported in the mainstream media because they're owned by Big Pharma. You know, all you have to do is watch mainstream media and you see it's all drug ads and ads for milk and, and meat and, you know, things that conspire to keep us unhealthy. So, you know, we have to really limit our exposure to those things. I mean, us and New Zealand are the only ones that allow drug direct-to-consumer advertising of pharmaceuticals, which I am vehemently against. I don't think it should be, you know, drugs should be marketed to the product. I actually worked on Remicade. No, I didn't work on Remicade. I worked in pharmacovigilance with Janssen Pharmaceuticals, and they have, and now the biologics, oh my God, every drug company has gotten on board with the biologics for the autoimmune diseases because that's such big business right now. So Remicade, yeah, I took calls for adverse events for Remicade and Simponi and Stelara and, you know, all these biologics where people got cancer and they got respiratory diseases, and because it lowers the immunity and and you're suppressing your immune system because it's supposedly attacking itself. I don't believe the body attacks itself. I kind of just don't buy into that theory at all. You know, I think there's if that's happening to you, there's other reasons it's happening. I don't think the body does that, you know.
Right. Wow. Well, you have been very generous with your time. I really appreciate your coming on for a good almost 45 minutes here. We've been talking and it's been fascinating. And I think you've opened up a lot of very interesting questions that we could plumb much more deeply, actually, both the negative, the sort of what this is actually doing to people, and the positive, Ayurveda, for example, and, you know, the truth that through our own efforts, taking responsibility for our health through our food choices and cultivating harmonious relationships with the people in our lives. And like you say, emotional healing. Mm-hmm. Our body, in many ways, is an outpicturing of the psychological dimension of our life. And so we have a system that's materialist that ignores that basic truth, which and then rakes in massive profits. I mean, it's really so criminal. But I can see mm-hmm. that it's got to get really bad before there's the old saying, people don't change till they hit bottom. And so maybe we're being pushed right to the bottom here. And then hopefully people will begin to wake up and see mm-hmm. the light as you're helping to make available to them. Do you have any final last thoughts you'd like to share? Besides everything you've already shared.
Well, I mean, I think many missed the point of the COVID. You know, the lockdown, I think, was an opportunity for us to go within and to really get into ourselves and our true core and our essence and our soul to see, you know, what's right for us, what's wrong for us. And I think instead of doing that, many people like binge watch Netflix and order, you know, a lot of junk food and not that there's anything wrong with doing that once in a while. I'm not saying that, you know, we all need a treat and, you know, to do something that we enjoy. But I think the real lesson was about, you know, love and family and compassion and, you know, really learning what the essence of relationship is and our relationship not only within ourselves, especially within ourselves, because that's what radiates out, but to each other, our families, and to animals and to the planet, and that our choices matter. And what we think, say, and do matters in every moment of every day, you know, not just when you're praying or meditating, but that we're in constant creation mode and we have the power. We may not be responsible for how we got here based on history and, you know, what happened, you know, millions of years ago, but we are responsible for getting ourselves out of it. And so I think, and we have a way more power than we think that we do. And so to stick with that and use your intuition, because I think if people really listen to their intuition, they would know this vaccine is not the answer to the problem. But I don't think people, you know, we're not trained that way. We're not trained that way to listen to our inner, you know, our inner guidance. Mm-hmm. We're trained to put doctors on pedestals and, you know, authority figures and spiritual figures and whatever, rather than accessing the inner guru, you know, the inner knowing that we can be guided by, and nature, and of course nature.
Right. Well said. Thank you. And I'll just add to that, maybe just that the idea that when we had the lockdown, that people could have used that opportunity better as a time for introspection. And you know, I agree with that, but I have to say I understand why that would be very, very difficult for people to do, because, you know, it's really quite a challenge for someone to actually choose to go on a silent retreat or an interior retreat. You know, I've done a lot of it, but I'm rare. Very few people actually choose to be alone in a room meditating or just with a few other aspirants meditating together without input, and to just contemplate the mind. But to be forced into it, and to be forced into it in a negative way, like where you're not allowed to, you know, you're locked in, you're locked up, and plus, the outside situation is very frightening. They're taking away your job. They're taking away your freedom. They're taking away your ability to go to church or have relationships with people. I mean, that's like really incredibly almost sadistic. I mean, it's attacking people at the most fundamental level. So I think it would be great if that could happen and everybody could be like the Buddha and say, okay, good, I'll just meditate here and go within and get enlightened. But, you know, there's no foundation for that. We don't teach people to meditate in school. I mean, anywhere, really. So it actually exacerbated, and people were, you know, found themselves, you know, girls and kids and wives very often, you know, getting abused and getting, you know, alcoholism, spousal abuse, all these things, suicides. I mean, it's really a situation, I think, that, you know, these people should be tried, I think, like for murder of millions of people is what's actually should happen. And, and VAERS, you know, the line that's going on, when you mentioned VAERS, I read about probably 2 weeks ago now that 1,600 people had been reported dead in the United States through VAERS because of the vaccine. I mean, that had been reported. And studies have shown for decades, done by Harvard and Johns Hopkins and so forth, that VAERS roughly, you know, only reports 1%. Mm-hmm. So if that's true, we're talking about 160,000 people that have died already from the vaccine, and it was about 250,000 people that have been hospitalized. And the media is saying, oh, nobody's died, everything's fine. I mean, it's like the most blatant, extreme case of information. Anyone who says that's maybe not true is censored or is called a conspiracy theorist, right? So if you don't believe, I mean, the situation, it's really, you know, but the fact that the average person isn't able to somehow penetrate and see through the delusion, the obvious illusion of this, to me, it's just so obvious. And yet I walk around in amazement, agog, that everybody's wearing masks and wanting to get vaccinated. And I think, man, it's just really shows a whole lifetime of believing that meat, dairy, and eggs are healthy. It leads, I think, to the same kind of thing. I'll just trust authorities, do whatever they say, and don't take responsibility for my life anymore. Because if I did, I wouldn't be able to kill all those animals. I wouldn't be able to live the way I'm living, right? So there's this huge already pre-existing sort of dumbing down of people that makes it very easy for them, for a few people to exploit billions. And that's what we see happening. And it's just seems to be unfolding in a way that's relentless right now. So I really doubly appreciate your willingness in the face of that to not retreat and try to just protect yourself, but to actually live authentically and create an environment for us to understand these things and empower people rather than disempower them. So thank you so much for taking time, and I really appreciate your efforts. And again, hope everybody will – I'll put a link to the to this and to send to everybody on our email list and so forth.
Thank you so much. And you do make a great point. People are not used to the going within, and that is absolutely very true. So to suddenly have everything taken away is definitely very traumatic. And so that's part of the consciousness. And one of the reasons I'm in love with Ayurveda is because it's a consciousness-based philosophy of living where, you know, everything you think, say, and do, which you put in your body, on your body, do to and with your body, is for your consciousness and then for your evolution. And so we need more of that. But again, people are not trained that way. People are not, I know my parents, you couldn't say anything against the doctor because the doctor was, no, the doctor said, and you know, my 90-year-olds are like that too. All of my doctors said, I'm like, yeah, but it's not right. So anyway, so thanks so much for inviting me, and I hope you guys come to the summit, and it's my honor to deliver it, and it's just time we are not silent anymore about these topics. And thank you, Will, for the work you have been doing for so long, and it's thrilled to be part of this movement.
Great. Okay. Bless you. Thanks so much, Joanne. Thanks.
Okay. Bye, everybody. Thank you for listening.
All right. Thanks so much.
Bye, Will. Bye, everybody.
Thanks. Wow, great. So, that's, you know, it's an example. I mean, where she's coming from, I really like that, because she's not merely criticizing. She's actually, having studied Ayurveda, that's one, I think, of a number of examples of ancient wisdom that could really help us today. And we have this very perverse, unfortunately, idea that there's no such thing as ancient wisdom, that we have science and Everything else is just superstition. Those are both people that believe in energy and they believe in the mind affecting the body or whatever, that's a bunch of kind of witchcraft or something. And this is a great wound in our society. It's gone on probably for centuries that herbalists and people who worked with nature and in harmony with nature have been persecuted relentlessly. And we've seen it all the way up through the Flexner Report back in the early 1920s, where basically after that it was only allopathic medicine based on intervention, basically petroleum-based drugs that would ever be actually allowed to be considered to be real medicine, and homeopathy and naturopathy and many other systems that were very powerful and popular were just destroyed pretty much by government agencies and by just sheer financial power and taking over the education of healthcare workers and doctors. So this has been really planned out. It didn't just happen by accident. I mean, there are definitely things that pushed us in that direction. But I think, as I show in the World Peace Diet, animal agriculture predisposes us to disconnect from nature and from animals and from our own inner wisdom. So I think that's what we got to keep that in mind, that animal agriculture is really the big, in many ways, the big Trojan horse, the big problem that's presented to us as our something good, giving us protein and calcium, but actually just reducing our physical health, psychological, spiritual, cultural, and environmental health to such a degree that we become really easy prey, I think, for a system that increasingly concentrates wealth and power in the hands of a few. So that's the challenge that we're faced with. And I think in the short time we have remaining, I'd like to see, of course, if anyone has any questions or comments or concerns, just in general, you'd like to bring up. This is our time. So please go ahead and let me know if you do. And let all of us know, because we have a chance to share together either things that you're really happy about, something you've discovered that's great, or something that you're curious about, or something that you're really upset or nervous. All these things, these are really unprecedented times we're living in, huge challenges, and everything is being turned upside down and inverted right now. So, I'll go ahead. I don't see anybody. I see Andy. So, Andy, you go ahead. Yeah, you have a question?
Hi, sorry. I don't want to take up all the time. But first, did you say you're going to put a link to her summit somewhere?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay.
I'll put it I'll put it on the Facebook group, and also I'll send it out. Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. So this was just a reminder, the topic of, if what they're doing will actually wipe out all of humanity, including themselves, the elite, if that's a possibility. That topic that I wanted brought up, and I don't know if it just seems that outrageous, but, I've been fighting every day, standing up for our rights. But now I'm sort of wondering, when Dr. Vernon Coleman did this video saying, the elite may have messed up and they might wipe out all of humanity, I'm thinking for the animals, that could be the greatest thing in the world. And is it worth it for me to fight anymore or to let them just wipe us all out? Because if humanity is such an evil hell for billions of animals every year, why do we need to be here? Is it worth it for me to fight or anybody to fight it if that can stop the animals from being tortured and murdered? So that's just my topic, wherever it goes from there.
Right. Okay. Thanks, Andy. And if anyone has anything you'd like to respond to that, I think, I've always said, I've said that in several of my talks over the years. I've said that when you just step back and look from the point of view of the earth and animals, the best thing that could ever happen would be like tomorrow morning, there's no human beings. Like, just human beings just by some miracle just vanish off this earth. I mean, you visualize what would happen. There would be this enormous celebration. I mean, life, everybody would just celebrate. Like the greatest thing that ever happened. My gosh, humans are gone. Woohoo! It would just be so fantastic. I mean, oh, the rainforest would start healing, the oceans would start healing, the dolphins and all the animals and the birds, and they could, you know, they just somehow they could come back again, and it would just, harmony would be restored. The basic harmony of this beautiful planet would be restored. And so that's, you know, that I would say that, and I would say that very thought, which is fundamentally true. We all know in our bones that that's absolutely true. That should hopefully, I used to say in my talks, that should hopefully motivate us to reflect on how we're living and make a positive change, because the same thing would happen, I feel, if the whole world, if all the human beings went vegan, right? If we all went vegan and not just in action, I mean in action, but also in understanding, and actually became as Gandhi said, the change that we would like to see in the world, and became, as Judy Carman has written in her book, Homo Ahimsa, became Homo Ahimsa, and are living in a way that's in harmony with nature and not eating animals and minimalizing our impact on the earth, like I learned to do as a Buddhist monk. You know, you never take more than you need and always recycle everything. And, you know, this whole sense of the sacredness of life. I mean, if we, as humans, we can live, we could definitely live that way. I mean, some people do, so everyone could. And I think the same end, you know, it would be attainable. And we would be able to be here and to, as expression of consciousness. So I guess your question is very well taken. And it's very interesting that you have this practical idea in mind, because it's sort of like you want to save everybody and try to help them not be vaccinated so they can live. But then you think, well, but then if they're going to still keep killing all these animals, am I really doing the right thing? You know, and I've had that thought myself, and when I've hoped that, you know, like sometimes I see it in nursing homes. I mean, I want these people to live. You want them to live, but what are they doing? I mean, most of them are so full of, very often, I used to go and play the piano in nursing homes all the time. And a lot of the people really are just not conscious. They're so drugged, and all they do is sit all day and look at the television, and they don't really know what's going on, but they're eating chickens and pigs and cows. And I think, why are we sacrificing these beautiful animals for people to watch TV? It's just to generate, I mean, it's like something like we think we're so superior to them that anything, you know, it just doesn't matter. We just use them like we would use rocks and what, you know, like they're just disposable commodities. And I think that arrogance and stupidity has brought us to this point. So, you know, it's humanity. But the thing is, I just have such a love in my heart for human beings, you know, such a love in my heart for the beauty that we've created, for symphonies and art and the tender interactions that human beings are capable of, and the beautiful things we can do in nature and with animals. And I think we have a tremendous purpose here on earth. We haven't discovered what it is, but I personally hate the idea really of just humans just suiciding, you know, ourselves completely, because I think I just love people. So I hate to think of you know, myself anyway trying to wish that humanity would die off, because I just wish we would act in with more wisdom, and so that's how I see it. But if anyone else has any thoughts on this kind of a thorny question, it would be fine to address it a little bit more. I think we have a couple more minutes. If anyone else has something you want to say, or if you have a different something really pressing, that's fine too.
Yeah.
Yes, Anne.
Yeah, here I am. Right, let me turn my camera on.
Oh, this is Judy.
Yeah.
Sounds like. Oh,
hi.
All right.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Andy. That's such a deep question. But I love what you said too, Will, about our potential. And I think this is our chance. This might be our only chance because we have hit bottom, or at least we're really close to it. And so we've got a chance now to be motivated to become homo ahimsa, to be the nonviolent human that we've always been meant to be. And so it's exciting from that point of view that this is our chance. But at the same time, I think continuing to do what you're doing, Andy, inform people about what's going on. And I think that's what we're all trying to do, is get the information out there to whoever will listen. And as vegans, we're used to how hard that is. And so we've got the momentum for that. But, it's kind of like watching a real close game. We really don't know how it's going to come out. Mm-hmm. So, but I think if we keep working on it in the direction that we're going and bringing the truth out, we're at least doing the best we can to help others come along with us and grow. We got to grow right now. We got to be the change, like Will said, right now. We really don't have any time to mess around. So, but thanks for bringing that up, because I think everybody has that question in their mind.
Thanks, Judy. Thank you. Yeah, that's a good point.
And thank you.
Statement. Thank you, Judy. Like, so Will, you know, you've been a vegan for 41 years, and Judy for such a long time, and there's probably other really long time vegans, and I have a really close friend who's just writing his biography for his 50th year being a vegan. And I guess my question is, like, you must feel an extreme hope now that maybe you've never felt to this degree, because veganism is increasing and it's everywhere. I don't know. You know, like, is that true? Because I'm feeling really hopeful for, maybe hope isn't the right word. I see this transformation. And I know, even like when I came back from Hippocrates 15 years ago and I was telling my kids, I'm going vegan. And they're like, oh, okay, you just came back from a cult or something, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not like that anymore. It's not like that at all anymore. Like my daughter, who's a veterinarian, I said, oh, I just started my dog vegan this week, and she wanted to know what kind of food I'm using, right? And she was so close to that before. Even like a month ago, she was teasing her sister, because her sister says he's quite thin, like slim, right? Not overweight dog at all. She goes, oh, is mom feeding him vegan? And even now she wanted to know. That's how much things have even changed for her in 1 month as a veterinarian taking a specialty in oncology. And I just, like, I don't shove it down her throat. She's pretty humble girl. Like, she's a really sweet woman, actually. But it's like, I just said, well, all my friends whose dogs grew old vegan, like, they don't have cancer or arthritis, and they live longer. And they usually die of old age instead of disease. And that's all I said, because I'm not going to go, like, you know. But I don't know. I guess it's kind of a question. You must really notice.
Yeah, I'll just say a couple things about that, but I think we are getting close to the end here, so I don't want to go on too long. But I think you're right. I mean, there's definitely a lot of positive things happening, especially with younger people identifying more and more, self-identifying as vegans and being interested in veganism for various reasons. I think they realize that whatever the older generations have been doing is not working, and so they want to do something radically different. And I think the vegan people have been working hard, you know, not just me, like millions of people who are vegans have been working hard to try to educate, you know, even up again, and it's been an uphill battle to get our message into the media of how devastating it is to our health and to our environment and to animals and to ecosystems and so forth. So I think that's all bearing fruit, and there may also be at a deeper level a maturing of human consciousness, you know. And there are people who are, I mean, I hear all kinds of stuff, you know, people saying, well, the earth is going through some kind of major upgrade. I just heard this the other day. We were in Sedona. Of course, when you're in Sedona, you hear all kinds of things. And there was this wonderful gathering, actually, on Saturday with Susan Pitcairn. She's a World Peace Diet facilitator. And her husband, Richard Pitcairn, who is a famous vegan veterinarian. And they had about 20 people at their house. And I led a meditation, and we had a discussion about the whole COVID thing. And there was a guy there who channels, you know, an entity who was saying that from the point of view of these beings who he said are from, I can't remember, but another planet or something, that the Earth is right now moving into the next dimension, something like that. And that some people who are, it's going to be a beautiful transition. I mean, but a lot of people are going to fall away, but the ones who are ripe, who are conscious, will go along with it. So, you know, it's kind of like separating the wheat from the chaff a little bit. But he said, ultimately, and I feel this myself, you know, everything ultimately is eternal consciousness, our true nature. So it's important to realize we're not these bodies. These bodies are merely like a footprint. You know, that when you make a footprint in the sand, you don't identify with the footprint. It's just, it's there as an expression. And the same thing, like, this is a footprint waving, you know. we can't see each other. We see this outer form. And to remember that the true life is eternal, beyond time and space. And so we're here to learn, to grow, to contribute, to express, to awaken, and so forth. We each have our own unique, probably our unique learning purpose here. And so hopefully you can hear me okay. Hopefully we can keep that in mind. And this time, which is so challenging, it's really to see what we're made of, I think, in some ways, and to give us the opportunity to actually do, in a sense, how Joanna is doing, to be true to ourselves, to trust our intuition, to speak our truth, and to be an embodiment of love, even when there are powerful forces that are pushing us not to do that, to be afraid, to be quiet, to shut up, to put on a mask, to be someone else, to be a robotic conformist. You know, we have these powerful forces that are pushing us to do that. And this is the opportunity to actually, you know, it seems so real, right? We could, who knows what's going to happen, but it's, and it is real in a sense. When we're in a dream, it seems very real. But the bigger picture, I think we have to try to keep that in mind. And that's why I think meditation is so important, because it can help connect us to the non-personal reality, the transpersonal reality. Maybe I'll just close with this idea, because I think it really is time to close here. That the word mask, we have this whole thing about masks, and masks are really the primary way, I think, that this ritual is being enacted, and we are being initiated into a cult of slavery is through the mask. And a mask is the old word in Greek, persona, where we get our word personality. Persona means mask. Persona, per, through, sona, sound. You're speaking through. It's, you know, the sound comes through the mask. You don't see, when people's wearing a mask, you don't see them. You just hear the sound coming through. And so when you put a mask on people, and especially this has never been done, to put a mask on a healthy person, right? I mean, like, how insane that is, to put a mask and make a healthy people wear a mask, and people go along with this, but that's covering their connection to their ability to express themselves, and it's covering their ability to breathe, right? The word spirit means breath. The word rauch in Hebrew is the breath of life. You know, it's breathing the breath of life. That's the very thing that God did in the beginning, was breathe the breath of life into human beings and into animals. And you have a something coming along telling you to disconnect from the breath. I mean, this is pure Satanism. I mean, pure demonic violence towards human beings. When you cut off the connection to the breath and to the ability to express and to smile, you can't do anything worse, really. If you want to just shut people down and enslave them and disconnect them from their power and from the eternal spiritual reality, you disconnect them from their breath and make it so that they're just breathing in their own toxicity, right? You know, there's four ways we eliminate toxins through urine, feces, the skin, and breath. And breath is the main one. You're breathing out toxins that need to be gotten. So you're breathing those in again, over and over again. I mean, this is so unbelievable that people would go along with this. I'm still in shock when I see this happening everywhere, even in Florida. You know, these people are wearing masks. So somehow we've gotten to the point where we've become so willing to allow our spiritual nature to be taken away from us, and that is not allowed. I mean, that we should not allow that. So hopefully, again, as we're saying, that we're getting to the point where people are going to finally say, no, this is enough. And but each one of us, we're responsible for ourselves, and I think doing the best we can to spread the vegan message of compassion for all living beings. I personally feel, including human beings, people are wounded. That's why they're doing this. People are wounded. So to be healers, to try to be an example and to be loving, I think that's really the key. So anyway, it's been a tremendous, but I really need to end up. My battery and my computer's about ready to go too, so it only lasts an hour and a half. So I'll just, we'll stop here. But the thing is, next week, a week from today is, April 1st, April Fool's Day, and so we have our first Thursday next week. So, that's the satsang. So please, if you're interested, of course, you're, welcome to join us for the satsang at the same time, same place. And please also look at the resources. There's a lot of interviews of myself there that you might find interesting over the past month. Also some music Madeline and I have done, and then a lot of links to articles about veganism, as well as the whole situation in the world with COVID and so forth. I think they're very much interconnected. So much love. Thank you again, everyone, for joining in. It's been a real honor to be able to share this way. And I'll close maybe with a tiny short piece of music since I'm sitting here. It took a long time to set it up here at the piano. And this is just maybe a very, like, 1 minute musical meditation where we can, again, just take a moment perhaps and close our eyes and just send our love and best wishes into the world, and we'll be back again in a week here. That compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Together, compassion encircles the earth for all beings
everywhere.
Again, compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And one more time.
Compassion circles the earth for all beings
everywhere. Much love from Madeline and from me. And go forth and multiply the message. We're delighted to be here. Oh, here she is. Madeline's our best. All right. You can say hi right now.
Yeah. Hi and goodbye. Until next time.
Oh, hello and goodbye. All right.
Thank you, Will and Madeline.
Thank you.
And everyone.
You guys.
Thank
right.
you.
We'll be in touch. Much love. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thanks.